Okay. So, still kind of in bizarro world here with these very, very general kinds of topological spaces. You can play around with the example we had last time. There's this funny five-point space with a strange topology. These are the open sets, then they satisfy our abstract topology axioms. The empty sets in there, the whole universe of points that we have is in there, and then if you take the intersection of any finitely many of these sets, you get another set on the list. If you take the union of any of these sets, you get another set on the list. And what does it mean for a sequence to converge? Well, in the metric definition, we had it in terms of an epsilon thing, right? Let's remember the metric case, and there's several equivalent formulations of it. So it would say there's the epsilon inversion. For every positive epsilon, the sequence eventually commits to being epsilon close to L. So for every epsilon, there's a wait time. Of course, the wait time will depend on epsilon in general. But after you throw away some finite number of outliers, everything is epsilon close to this limit. But because of the way open sets are defined for a metric space, this would actually be equivalent to saying the following. For every open set that contains L as an element, there is a wait time finite, such that beyond that wait time, everything is in this open set. If you think about it, the way the open sets are defined, any open set that contains L contains a ball of radius epsilon around it. Right? I mean, this condition here, you can write it in terms of sets as A is in the epsilon ball, right? AN is in the epsilon ball around L. Right? That's just what that means. That's how we define the epsilon ball with center L. Any open set that contains L contains one of these epsilon balls. So if you wait long enough, you're eventually inside the epsilon ball, so you're eventually inside U. depending on you, you may need to choose epsilon really small, but by definition, open sets are metric space. Every point in a metric space is in the interior, right? So it's got a whole little ball around it that fits in the set. One way to think about U being open is just we're saying that the interior of U is equal to U, right? And L being in the interior of U in a metric space is equivalent to there existing a positive epsilon, such as the ball of radius epsilon is contained in U. That's true for any set. It doesn't have to be open. So maybe I should use a different letter here, not A. So that's why I'm saying that these two versions, open sets versus distances and epsilon balls, they're really saying the same thing. There's many different ways to state this stuff because there's many equivalent definitions, right? I mean, you don't have to take open defined as interior equals its original set, right? That's just, you could go directly with, this kind of thing as being your definition. Every point in your set has an epsilon ball around it that fits in the set. That could be your definition of open. But however you end up defining it, this concept here makes sense without talking about distances. So we want to use that version because we don't have to know any, we don't have to measure distances to talk about convergence. We just have some crazy topological space where distance doesn't make any sense, like this one. We can still talk about what it means for a sequence to converge. Alright, so let's see what crazy things this space will do with sequences. How about this sequence? It's just going to alternate between 3 and 4. Forever. Okay. Now there's 5 points in the sequence, so there's 5 possible limits of the sequence. So we can ask. In general, a sequence doesn't have to have a limit, even in a metric space, right? If we were talking about the real line of the usual metric, this sequence would have no limit. It does, because it doesn't commit to being close to 3 or being close to 4, no matter how long you wait. Right? It keeps going back and forth. But in general topological space, if you just work directly with this definition, you might be surprised at what happens. So, is 1 a limit of this sequence? Okay, who has an opinion? You just have to trace through the definition for every open set containing the point. What are the... So some of these open sets don't contain one, so we don't care about those. So for this first question here, look at the open set. For every open set containing one, if one is to be a limit, then we need the sequence to commit to being in that open set after a finite weight. Okay. So you can just go through the open sets that contain one. Will the sequence make that commitment if you wait long enough? Or does it keep having points outside of your open set no matter how long you wait? So what's the hardest commitment to make? Since this is a finite topology, there's a smallest open set containing one. Right? So the toughest commitment to make would be, does the sequence eventually commit itself to staying in singleton one? No. No matter how long we wait, there's going to be more threes and fours which are not in singleton one. Right? So the failure of making this commitment, it would say, no matter how long I wait, there's still something that's going to happen I'm not in there. So let's try and negate this, right? Might help to write it out formally. To say that it is not true that if we wait long enough, everything is in this set U. What is this? That would say, for every wait time, there's going to be some problem, right? Even after we've thrown away all the stuff before K, we find a problem. This says, you know, roughly speaking, after a finite amount of time, there are no more problems. The opposite of that is to say, after any finite amount of time, there is another problem. Right? Or, in other words, there are infinitely many problems, because we're talking about the natural numbers here. Right? And so, are there infinitely many problems? Yeah, you bet. In fact, what can you pick for... You could just use n to be... Just look, for any k, ak is, you know, not in 1. Right? So there's a problem right there at k, right? Okay, what about 2? Well, same thing. It's too hard to... This sequence is not going to commit to singleton 2 no matter how long we wait. Okay. What about 3? Is 3 a limit of this sequence? Why not?
Because 4 is not in any open set including 3.
It's in this open set.
No, the second and the first and second. There exists the open set.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first and the second.
How about this open set?
I mean,
or that
two,
one?
The two, these two, these two. Yeah. I mean, these two.
Those two?
I mean, 2, 3.
Mm-hmm.
And 1, 2, 3, these two sets.
Yes, I agree. Either one of those is a counterexample. Yes. So if we pick this one or this one, either way, the sequence will not commit to these sets. All we need is just one open set around 3 that the sequence does not eventually commit to. And now it's true that, say, for 2, 3, or 1, 2, 3, either way, every other number, right, every odd term of the sequence is in the set. But every even term is not. So maybe AK is in 2, 3, but if it is, then the next term is not. So what you have is either... You can't have both of them, right? If it doesn't fail at for any K, if it doesn't fail at K, it'll fail at the next one, right? Because if K is odd, then this is then A sub K would be a 3, and so it would be in there, but then K plus 1 would be even, and so it would fail. If K is even, then A sub K is a 4, and it's not in there. So wherever you stop at your term K, either you fail right away because you're at a 4, or you're at 3, and so you're okay for the moment, but the very next term will break the demand to be in 2, 3. So the sequence never commits to being in that open set that contains 3. And what about 4? Yes, right. There's a smallest open set around 4, and it's this one. 2, 3, 4, 5.
Can you have 2?
Ah, yes. Edwin's looking ahead. Yes, 5 is also a limit. Limits are not unique in general, no. See? This is bizarro world, I told you. For any open set containing 4, this topology, there's a smallest open set containing 4. There is a wait time. Wait, just start at time 1. The sequence is always in that open set, right? So for all n, at least 1, you know, all of them, right? You don't have to wait at all. Right? An is in 2, 3, 4, 5, and whatever open set you pick, if it contains 4, it has to actually contain all of those points as well, because that's the smallest open set around 4. And the exact same thing for 5. If you want limits to be unique, you have to make some additional assumptions beyond the topology axioms. And this is really weird, right? Why should 5 be the limit of a sequence of 3s and 4s? Yeah. So that's how the sequences work according to this abstract definition.
Milovic, why do you, why did you write there 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? This set is the subset of U. What does that mean?
Well, see, the requirement here, see, I have to eventually, for every open set around my supposed limit, I have to eventually commit to that set. So it's not just good enough to say, oh, I've got an open set around 5 and I eventually commit to it. I need to eventually commit to every open set around 5. But that's easy to do in this situation because there's a smallest open set.
What if there wasn't the smallest open set?
Well, then it's harder to prove convergence, right?
If there's a sixth term, would it be yes as well?
Well, where are we going to put the six, right?
Oh no, like if you had six, you know what I mean?
Well, if I just put it in here, right? If you imagine a 4.5 there, basically throw in the 4.5 in here and in here, but don't change anything else, then yeah, that would also be a limit point. Yeah.
So you can have like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't want to like change what I have over there, so why don't we... Okay. Let's... So what's the topology you're interested in? You want 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
And what are my open sets?
Is it like that basically?
Yeah, similar. But you just have a sixth one now.
Okay, good.
You just add a one.
Okay. So do I keep all the old sets literally unchanged?
Yeah.
Except there's one set I can keep all these sets. All right, let's say I have, if I leave all the old sets totally unchanged, so let's see, I've got all those, what's missing? And then I even keep the 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, then there's the question about, well, I'm still going to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 be an open set now. Okay, so this is all the open subsets of X. Now, with this 6 left hanging out here, it's not quite a topology yet. At the minimum, I'm going to need to add in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 to make it a topology. Right? That's the bare minimum. So if I add a new point, at minimum, I have to add in the whole new bigger universe as a new open set. If I do that, then yes. The only open set around this 6 is the set 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So 6 is the limit of every sequence in this space because the only open set around 6 is the whole thing. So basically 6 thinks it's infinitely close to everything. So everything converges to 6. Particular sequences may also converge to 4 and 5 like ours does, right? Yeah. But in this topology, you could have the constant sequence 2, 2, 2, 2, 2 forever, right? And it equals 2, right? But it that has a limit, but it also has 6 as a limit.
Wait, what if you included like another open set there? It included 6 and 3.
Yeah.
Just 6 and 3. Then, for the question of 3, the limit as m goes to infinity would be a limit for that set, right? For 3, 6.
Well, let's see.
If we were to, let's say, include that open set.
Well, a number of things would happen. Okay, so you're not saying take... So the issue, though, is that some things... If I throw this stuff in the topology, then... So you're asking something like... So what's the sequence?
Let's say, like, it's the same sequence here.
3, 4, 3, 4? Okay. not sure what the best way to write it is. I don't want to confuse the set notation with sequences. Okay, so you want to know what is the limit of that in some topology here, and do I keep all the old open sets?
Yeah, sure. All right. No, so it's just like this one, but then you also connect 6 and 3.
Well, remember though, if I do that, that's going to isolate 3. Because 2, 3 intersected with 3, 6 will just give me singleton 3. So, so that's something to keep in mind. Let's see, what else is in there? 2, 3, 4, 5. Am I forgetting anything else? Okay. I guess under this one, I could also union up 2, 3, 4, 5 with 3, 6 to get 2 through 6. And then, of course, you've got the whole thing. Okay, so... All right. So what is this? What could this limit be? Well, let's see. It's definitely not 1 and not 2. It's not 3 anymore because it never was 3, but it wasn't 3 before either. Because we already had the 2, 3. It'll still be 4 and it'll still be 5, but it will not be 6 because with this neighborhood 3, 6, all of these 4s, I never commit to being in 3, 6. There's always another 4 that's not in 3, 6.
Okay. I mean, 2, 3, 6.
Yeah, I'm going to have to add more, right? Okay. Yes. There's other open sets I didn't draw.
So then the open set would be yes always if it has 3 and 4 in it.
Right, yeah, that's because any open set around 4 and 5 in this topology also has 2 and 3. Any open set around 4 or around 5 also has 2 and 3. As long as I keep that 2, 3, 4, 5 being the smallest open set around 4 and 5, then it's easier to converge to 4 or 5 because you just have to commit to being among these 4 points. And you could have something like this. 2, 3, 4, 5, 2, 3, 4, 5. 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, it just repeats 2, 3, 4, 5. Right? So this is not 1, 2, 3, or 6. But is 4 and 5. So yeah, 2, 3, 6 is also open, as Hong Song is getting at. And then there's 1, 2, 3, 6. It gets really annoying to have to draw these things to include all the possible unions. In this topology, actually, singleton 1 and singleton 3 are open, so their union 1, 3 needs to be in there as well. Which means I also need to have, let's see here.
1, 3, 6.
Well, no, I don't need to have 1, 3, 6 because, oh yes, I do, right, because 3, 6 and 1, 3, 6, yeah, so it gets to be a mess really fast. Right. Fortunately, there is something called a base which can make this a little less unwieldy. So you really a base tells you enough to do these computations. Okay, So. B is a base for topology T if B is a subset of T, and for every point, maybe let's say with the underlying, let's call the underlying set of points X, say. How's it go? Maybe here's the pithy way to write it. For all points in open sets, you can fit a smaller open set from the base around the point. So this says if you got any point and an open set around it, then you can find a smaller open set from your base. So this is a definition. And here's an equivalent characterization. B is a base of T if and only if B is a subset of T and everything in T is a union of things in B. The reason that's equivalent is because for any open set, you could look at every point in that open set and draw a little basic open set around it. So you imagine for any open set, just look at every point and draw a little basic set around it that fits inside your open set. And if you've got every point, then this has to union up to the whole thing, to the whole set U. And it doesn't union up to too much because you always pick these basic sets to be subsets of U. So if you have this property, then you have this property. Conversely, if you have this property, then for any point in an open set U, you look at one of these unions and you say, well, it's in the union, so it's in one of these basic sets. Okay? So this thing says, really, you have this kind of situation. You have a bunch of sets, and that's what being a union means. They cover all the points in U, but nothing more. So that would give you exactly that. Right? If P is, say, maybe I'll make this more pointed. It's okay to pick the same open set for multiple points, okay? My diagram wasn't showing very well, but there can be lots of overlap and stuff. The point is, everything in here has, if it's in the union, has it, that means it's in one of the elements of the union. So you get that. So these are two ways of thinking about the same thing. And so you don't need this because of nice things. Now once you have this, if you have a base, you can compute things purely in terms of the base. Interior, closure, boundary, exterior, sequences, limits, limit points, the derived set, all of that stuff you can compute purely in terms of the base. So you really don't need to think about all of the open sets. You just need a base. And you can compute all those things. So, for example, so let's say we have some test set, a subset of X. Let's do some computations. Think about what does it mean if you're in the interior? That means you're in the largest open subset of A. Okay. Well, if you're in an open set, right, then you're in a, then you can shrink down to a smaller set from your base. It's also open. So you're in the interior if and only if there's a basic open set that contains your point and fits inside A. Right? Because the interior is the biggest open set that fits inside A. So any point in that open set is also in some smaller set from your base. Now, the exterior, then you can compute the same way, because the exterior is just the interior of the complement, right, by definition. So you're in the exterior if and only if there exists a basic set such that P is in this basic set, and your basic set is disjoint from A. In other words, contained in the complement of A. So you can just compute everything in the basic set. And if you know the interior and the exterior, you can compute everything else. Because remember that if you have any space X, it's always cut up into three parts. Right? There's for any set A subset of X, the interior, the boundary, and the exterior partition X into three different subsets. If you know any two of those subsets, then you know the third, just by taking the complement of the union of the other two. And so the whole thing is X, and then so if you know interior and exterior, then you know everything. What's the interior and the boundary put together? That's the closure, right? And what was the other? Oh yeah, and then of course the trickier one is that derived set. So for this one, you require that for every open set around P, that open set has to hit A at a point different than P. Well, every open set around P can be shrunk to a basic open set. Okay. All the basic sets are open, so you're already having to meet that requirement for the basic sets. And if you meet it for all the basic sets, then you meet it for all the open sets in general, because for any open set where you're trying to meet some point in A distinct from P, if you can do it for that for some smaller basic set, then you certainly do it for the bigger open set. Right? The smaller the set is, the harder it is to find a point in A distinct from P. So I'll write down the definition we talked about last time. Okay, so by definition, this just means for every U open that contains P, you need that there is something that's in that open set and in A other than P itself, right? Well, so the smaller you make U, the harder this gets, right? Because you need to find something here that's not P. But you can always shrink any U to a smaller thing. So this just reduces to for all B in the base. For all B in the base where P is in that set. So for every basic, I'm going to write two B's in a row. How about for all V's that contain P and are in the base, so you can compute everything using just a base. Sequences too. Demand for a sequence for every open set around the point that's supposedly a limit, the sequence has to eventually commit to that open set. Well, the smaller the open set, the harder it is to make that commitment. Right? So a base has the property that for any point, if you have one commitment problem, you've got a harder commitment problem. Right, that's in the base. So if you can handle all these basic commitment problems, then you can handle all the commitment problems, because going to a bigger, more general open set just makes things easier. So if you can handle it for the small open set, so to speak, you can handle a problem. So you don't need to check all the open sets. You just need to check enough open sets. If I'm worried about does my sequence eventually commit to U, well, let's check for some smaller open set that's in the base. If it eventually commits to V, then it eventually commits to U. Conversely, So that shows that if you meet the commitments for all the basic sets, you'll meet them for all the open sets because of this key property here. Now, on the other hand, what you need to show the converse. So suppose you do meet the commitment for all open sets, so you converge in the usual sense. Well, then, as a special case, you meet the commitment for all the basic sets, because all basic sets are open sets by definition. So both directions of this are valid. One is just the kind of the. I mean, going from here to here is kind of trivial because you
you're making a weaker requirement. You're only requiring basic neighborhoods of P to be handled. And going the other way is because any open set commitment requirement can be, you can shrink it down to a harder one.
Getting worried, I'm saying too many words without writing enough down. Down some of those things I said, but so for example, let's say I have thought a lot, right? So from left to right, if the limit is P, then I want to claim that, that I need to handle some basic set. Is just a subset of the topology, that means P is open, so by definition of limit, I'm eventually in that open set, because I'm an open set around P. The other direction, if basic sets around P, we eventually commit to that basic set. And suppose we have some open U around P, right? We wanna show now that we meet this requirement to show that we've actually got a limit. So we just use the fact that we have a base. Given U open around P, we choose a V in the base, such that it's still got P, but it fits inside U. But by hypothesis, there is some wait time such that we'll eventually be in that V. But V is contained in U. So that means we do have a wait time after which everything is in that open set. Right. So these requirements for eventually committing to various open sets, you can reduce the computational burden of having to check all those by just looking at some base. And in a finite topology, right, there's a natural way to get your base. Just pick the, for each point, you just look at the smallest open set around that point. So from one point of view, you start with a topology, and then you can reduce things to get a base. Okay, so. So we have what? So we had this picture. Okay. So starting from here, here's the smallest base. I would need to have that one. I'd need to have the smallest open set around every point. Because what do you have to have for a base? The requirement is all the sets in your base better be in the topology, so they're open sets. And for every point and every open set around that point, you have to be able to shrink down to a smaller open set that's in your base. So in a finite topology, you've got to take the smallest open set around each point. Smallest open set around 3 is 2, 3. For 4 and 5, the smallest open set around them is that. Okay. So this topology has 7 sets in it. Right? There's 7 different open sets, right? Counting the empty set. Right? With a base, you know, it's often much easier to work with. Right? I really only need to think about these 4 sets. And I can compute everything there is to know about the topology. Now, this is, you know, the metric spaces have some nice bases. Right? Let's say you have a metric space. And let's suppose we have a dense subset. Okay, I'll call it a Q. So remember, being dense just means that your closure is the whole universe of points. Right? So if you have a dense subset of a metric space, then you can just take the open balls centered around points in your dense set, and you can restrict the radii to something that gets arbitrarily small. So how about just the 1 over n's, right? It doesn't have to be all positive epsilons, right? Distance from x to the complement of u, which is positive. Delta around x fits inside u. All right. Now, Q is dense in M. Another way of saying that is that it's the exterior of Q is empty. Let me try and write it. Okay, so Q is equal to the whole thing. That's equivalent to saying that its exterior is empty. Right? Remember our picture over here. Right? There's the exterior is the biggest open set disjoint from U. The interior is the biggest open set contained in U, and the closure is the complement of the exterior. And so, here's the thing though. This is open, right? So think about this as interior of complement. Right? The exterior of a set is the interior of its complement. So, so you can't have this can't be contained in the complement. This is an open set. If it was contained in the complement, then the complement would have non-empty interior. Right? The biggest open set contained in the complement is the empty set. This set has a point, X. Can't fit an open non-empty set in something that has empty interior. By definition, the empty set is the biggest open set that fits in there. So that means there exists something in here that's not in the complement of Q. In other words, there's something in here that's in Q. There exists some point Y that's both in Q and in this ball, radius delta around X. Now, now just choose a 1 over N, small enough that you fit inside. Actually, you know what? My picture is not quite doing it. You know what I need to do? I need to make this a little bit smaller. Well, that one's fine, but you'll see why I need to do this in a minute. Why do we need a delta over 2? Okay, so I need to cover X. And I need a 1 over N. I'm trying to wonder if I should make a bigger picture. Okay. Delta. And you want to have some Y close enough, okay, such that you can draw some 1 over N. And it needs to be big enough to cover that X, but it still needs to fit inside the delta ball. All right, so the question is, how close do you have to get Y? I think I might actually want to do delta over 3. I think
I think I might actually need a delta over to read here.
I think that'll do it. If these are closer than delta over 3, I think it's okay. Alright, so here's why it works now. So let n be the least, so let n be the least natural number such that the distance from x to y is less than 1 over n. Then x is in the ball around y of radius 1 over n. And that's in the base. Okay, there's one other potential problem here, which is that maybe this distance is 1 or bigger, and you'll never find an n small enough. So just round the delta down to round it down to something smaller than 1. Okay. Because you don't want to have no solution at all here. So I want this distance to be less than 1. That's one way to force it. The other way to force it to be less than 1 would be, instead of delta over 3 here, I could have used the minimum of a half in delta over 3. The point is to get this less than 1, because you don't want the 1 over n to be too big here. You need to be big enough, but not too big. Okay. Okay. Now, what do we need to show? To meet the property of being a base, we need to shrink down. So I want to show that this is contained in U, right? I want this thing to be contained in U. Now, it will be contained in U if it's contained in my ball of radius delta. Because the requirement for a base is that for an arbitrary open set around an arbitrary point, you shrink to a smaller set in the base. And the base consists of open sets. Okay, so we just need to prove what? We just need to prove that this is fits inside that U. Okay, so okay. Well, all we really know about U is things like this. All right, so why is there a Q there? It's supposed to be a Y. So if we could get inside that ball, that would be enough. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, let's just do a little computation. Okay. Suppose Z is in that ball. How do we know if it's in this ball around Y, how do we know it's in the ball around X? Well, let's just make sure it's not too far away from x. Some point z here that we're worried about. Okay, distance from x to z less than or equal to distance from x to y plus distance from y to z. Okay. How far away? All right, let's see. So distance from x to y is less than 1 over n. And the distance from y to z is also less than 1 over n. Okay? This is 2 over n. How does... So we just need we just need 2 over n to be less than or equal to delta.
So we just need to make sure that 2 over n is smaller.
Now, we know that n is the least thing that covers this, all right? And we know that this is less than... So... We're getting that at least... Yeah. So if we went to... Where am I making a typo here? I know I'm making a typo somewhere. That's where. Okay. Oh. It's kind of confusing. As n gets greater, the 1 over n's get smaller. So you want the smallest 1 over n that's still bigger than this distance. So that corresponds to a greatest n. Alright? I'm sorry, I was getting things backwards. So as n gets greater, the 1 over n gets smaller. Eventually it'll be too small. But I made the delta smaller than 1, so 1 over 1 would work here. And maybe 1 over 2 works, maybe 1 over 3 works, maybe 1 over a million works. But eventually it stops working, because the 1 over n's will eventually get smaller than whatever that positive real is. The only way this wouldn't exist is if x is the same as y. But that's a much easier case. If x is the same as y, then any 1 over n ball smaller than delta is good. So the interesting case is when they're different. So we just need that. And, okay, so 1 over n plus 1 is too small, right? Because we made the 1 over n as small as possible, satisfying this. Equivalently, we made the n as great as possible. And these are natural numbers, so if you double a natural number, let me write the quote. Okay, so delta over 3 is greater than the distance from x to y. 1 over n plus 1 is too small because of how we chose the n. And for a natural number, doubling it makes it at least as big as adding 1. So let's see if I made the delta over 3 small enough. If not, I'll change it to a delta over 4. Let's see here. Let's see. If I multiply this by 4, some small fraction of delta, and it's going to be okay. I should have just done delta over 100. I would have known it would have worked. I was trying to be efficient. All right, so and delta over 4 will do it. Sorry about that. So now multiply both sides by 4. So this is a handy example. For example, if you're thinking about the reals with the usual metric, right? You know, then a natural dense set is the rationals. So this, as a corollary, this shows the reals have a countable base in their usual topology. Take all the open intervals around rationals with radii 1 over n. In three-dimensional space, the same thing is true. You could pick all the points that have rational coordinates in all three coordinates, right? And then draw and have balls of radius of the form 1 over n around them. I didn't say all the things I planned to say, so I want to say some more stuff, so I'll come back and say it, you know, on Wednesday. I know I'm getting a little bit further behind schedule, but there's some more stuff that needs to be said on Wednesday. I guess we'll still be in sections. 4.3 and 4.4 on Wednesday. I mean, I haven't gotten to. This is the base stuff is 4.3, but I haven't gotten to subbases. There's some other stuff I could say about bases, time permitting, and then there's all of 4.4 continuity, homeomorphisms, topological properties. Any questions? Yes, Joshua.
So any homework that we have that we weren't able to turn in, we could turn it in by Monday, right?
If you want to make an amendment, yes. If you want to, if you have something you didn't turn in before because you didn't have time to do it, or you realized you made a mistake in something, you want to turn in a new version of it, yeah. Turned in on Monday. Also turn in that homework I assigned on day 8. For the undergrads, it was just that one problem, which was 3.7 number 1. And let the grad students also do number 17. Finished all of those things, let me know. So I'll get you started on something else. But if everyone is still working on one of those things, whether it's a 3.7 exercise or you're trying to amend an older assignment, I'll let you keep working on that.